know what time it is. It's time for Ask a Spaceman. I'm your host, Paul Sutter. You've got questions and I've got answers. You know how the show works, but let's illuminate it again. No, wait, I've used the illuminate joke. Well, we'll just have to run with it. Let's illuminate it again. You go online to Twitter or Facebook, use the hashtag Ask a Spaceman, send me some questions, and I will answer them. We have one simple goal with this show: complete knowledge of time and space. And on the road to complete knowledge of time and space, we have many questions around a simple topic. We have at KDA Welch asking, is dark matter made of black holes? We have Andreas C via email, how do we know dark matter isn't just different gravity? Oscar Z email, why can't dark matter just be black holes? Peter W email, why is dark matter a thing instead of just modified gravity? William G email, just wants to know, what's dark matter? Olivia P also, what's dark matter? Matthew A, what is dark matter made of? Is it just modified gravity? And at the mayor, but instead of the letter A, it's number 4, at the mayor on Twitter, are there alternative theories for dark matter? So I get it. You are curious about dark matter, especially because I kind of teased it over 2 years ago. That's right. It's been 2 years when I said, yeah, don't worry, I'm going to do an episode on explaining what dark matter is. So don't worry. But here we are. Dun, da, da, da. Here we are. And you know, I try to make each episode independent, where it just lives on its own, where you can just download any random episode from the back catalog and you can listen to it. It's self-contained. You have all the information you need. You get in, you get out, you have a juicy bit of space knowledge, and you are able to move on with your life. But in this case, I strongly suggest you go back and listen to episode number 7. Episode number 7 is all about how we know dark matter exists. That is the premise of this episode. That is the starting point for this episode. The starting point for this episode is that there's something fishy happening in the universe. There's more than meets the eye. Stars and galaxies are orbiting too fast. The gas in galaxy clusters is too hot. Patterns in the cosmic microwave background aren't the right size. The large-scale structure of the universe itself is a little too crisp and clean. And that needs its whole new episode, by the way, so feel free to ask. There's something afoot in our universe. What is going on? Well, usually in astronomy, there's lots of things about our universe that we don't understand. Usually in astronomy, we just say, that's curious. But some cases, like dark matter and dark energy, it's not, that's curious. It's more like, what the, insert your favorite curse word from your local language here, is going on? There's just so many things that aren't working right. And the current best answer to all those questions is, you guessed it, dark matter. But just saying that isn't very satisfactory. It's not a big enough meal. That's a snack. That's an appetizer. Just say, oh yeah, dark matter explains a bunch of observations about our universe. I want to change that. Let's dig in to the meat and potatoes. Not just meat. Meat and potatoes of dark matter. Where to start? Well, I definitely can't fit everything about dark matter into a single episode. So I expect, well, I shouldn't put that burden on you. I hope there are follow-up questions. And I'll give you a few pointers throughout the episode where I know I could carry on, dig a little deeper, devote a whole other entire episode to it. So this is still, it's not as high level as episode number 7. It's definitely lower level, getting to the weeds of dark matter, but it's not super low down. So there's still plenty more discussion about dark matter that we need to have. Also, I need to warn you that I'm going to use the phrase WIMP miracle later on. That's WIMP miracle. I just thought I'd mention it now so that you're nice and prepared, so that later on in a couple dozen minutes, when I start using the phrase WIMP miracle on the regular, you aren't freaked out. It's, you just need that, you know, kind of internalize it, pause the episode if you need to, take a break, stare off into the sunset, and then come back. But right now I'm going to start with a bullet. The bullet cluster. A cluster of galaxies is the most massive gravitationally bound object in the universe. They usually clock in around 1 quadrillion times more massive than the sun. That's 10 to the 15 times more massive than the sun. For those of you who don't pay attention to your various illions, we're in the 1 quadrillion range here. Most of these massive beasts, clusters of galaxies, are isolated. They live pretty solitary lives. I mean, yeah, galaxies will like fly on into a galaxy cluster. But every once in a while, you get a crash. You get a collision between these two massive objects. By the way, they're usually a few million light years across, at least 1 quadrillion times more massive than the sun. These are large things. And when they crash into each other, it's very awesome because it is one of the most energetic events in the universe. And it's very useful because everything that's inside the cluster of galaxies gets all mixed up. So you get to see the parts. It's like a car crash test. You slam one car into another and you get to see what the cars are made of because they're all turned inside out. And when galaxy clusters crash into each other, they turn inside out. So you get to see what they're made of. Maybe a car crash isn't the best analogy, though. And it's fair to ask, what exactly happens when two of the biggest things in the universe collide? Well, to answer that question, we need multiple kinds of observations. You need to bring out the visible, bring out the infrared, bring out the X-ray, bring out the radio, and hey, let's get fancy, guys. Let's use gravitational lensing to map out the mass. This is where light from background galaxies gets twisted and distorted from the deformations in space-time due to this very massive object. The amount of distortion tells you about the mass and the distribution of mass inside the galaxy cluster. That's a whole other episode. If you want to ask about gravitational lensing, be my guest. And in the case of the Bullitt cluster, this is a recently merged pair of galaxy clusters. They recently merged, I want to say a few hundred million years ago, which in cosmological terms is recent enough. They crashed into each other, and we could see the different parts based on how they interacted during this collision. If we look in the visible light, if we just look with a plain old normal telescope, we see individual galaxies, and there's a couple thousand galaxies in each of these clusters. The galaxies themselves are smaller than the total volume of the cluster. The cluster is a huge giant ball, and then the galaxies are just tiny little bees or flies flying around inside of that giant ball. So when these two giant balls collide, the individual galaxies just whoosh past each other. They don't even hardly interact. So it's like one of my favorite analogies, here we use it again, us two swarms of bees mixing into each other. The actual bees don't collide because the beads are pretty small compared to the size of the swarm. Okay, that's galaxies. What else is there? Well, if we look in X-ray, something interesting pops up. Between all the galaxies in a cluster is a thin, hot gas. It fills up the volume. It's like the worst soup you've ever had because it's so thin. It would actually like register as a vacuum here on Earth, but it's so hot that it's capable of emitting X-rays. And it just permeates everything in the galaxy cluster in between all this. It's the soupy bit, and the galaxies are the bits of cereal. So the hot thin gas is the milk, and the galaxies are the cereal floating around in the bowl. And the gas, what we see when we look at the Bullitt cluster in X-rays, is the gas gets all tangled up. There are bow shocks, there are turbulence, there are cold fronts. If you slam a ball of gas into another ball of gas, it's going to get messy, and we see the messiness. It actually looks really cool, but we see it. Okay, so the galaxies themselves have whooshed past each other. So now they're on opposite sides. They've traded places. But the gas that made up the galaxy cluster got all tangled up, mixed up, and it's still doing its thing. It's rubbing up against itself in the center of the Bullitt cluster. So then we turn to lensing, gravitational lensing, so we can map out where all the stuff is. We can look for the concentrations of matter. And, it's there. It's in the Bullitt cluster. The Bullitt cluster certainly is heavy. There's a lot of mass in there, but it's not with the tangled gas in the center. And it's not exactly with all the galaxies. There's two big lumps of something off to the sides of the central tangled up gas knot. They're kind of lobe-like things, big just lobes of mass on either side of the central knot of tangled up gas. What is this telling us? This is telling us that most of the mass of a galaxy cluster is not in the galaxies. But it's also telling us it's not the hot gas between the galaxies, because that's all tangled up in the center, and this is somewhere else. In fact, this something else, what's making up most of the mass of a galaxy cluster, isn't glowing at all in any wavelength of light. We checked infrared, visible, microwave, radio, gamma ray, X-rays, the whole spectrum. Nothing. No signal at all except from gravitational lensing, which is telling us there are these two concentrations of mass. It's dark. I know what you're about to say. I'm a mind reader. It's a thing. You're about to say, wait a minute, I'm about to talk about dark matter. But what if we're just getting gravity wrong? That would be a reasonable thing for you to say to me. Before you talk about dark matter, how do you know dark matter is a thing and it's not just we're getting gravity wrong? What if gravitational lensing is giving us a bad result? What if it's just nonsense? What if we're trusting this method of gravitational lensing to tell us where the mass is in a galaxy cluster, but it's wrong and it's not really reflective of reality as it is in real life? It's something else. We're just wrong. What if gravitational lensing ain't all a cracked up be? That is a fair point. General relativity, which is how we understand gravitational lensing, has been tested in the solar system, but not so much in larger systems. Maybe it's just wrong at larger scales. Maybe once you get outside of a solar system, maybe once you get outside of a single galaxy, general relativity is just the wrong answer, that we're misunderstanding gravity. It's not crazy to say that. We've been wrong about gravity before, which is how we arrived at general relativity. But maybe Einstein's not enough. Maybe we need new gravity to explain the observations of the Bola cluster. But let me take a step back. Back in the 70s, when Vera Rubin, a pioneering astronomer, was looking at the rotation curves of galaxies. She was watching how stars are orbiting around the centers of galaxies. And those stars were moving way too fast, faster than they should be, given all the stuff that's hot and glowy in a galaxy. These were the first major pieces of evidence for dark matter. And we asked a question, whoa, these stars are moving super weird, guys. What's going on? Could be we're missing mass. Maybe there's dark matter. Maybe there's matter that doesn't light up, and that's explaining the gravitational interaction of these stars, the speed of their orbits. Or we're missing physics. Maybe we need to modify gravity. And one of the first attempts, the major attempts to modify gravity, was called modified Newtonian dynamics, or MOND, which was a competitor to the dark matter models. In fact, Vera Rubin, who discovered these rotation curves, favored modified gravity interpretations over dark matter interpretations. And if all we had were a bunch of rotation curves from a handful of galaxies, we'd be stuck. We wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a universe with dark matter and a universe with modified gravity. They both give the same result. They both give these sped up orbits of stars around galaxies. But here's the thing. We have more than just a handful of rotation curves in galaxies. If you want to explain all the observations, the rotation curves of galaxies, the temperature of the gas in isolated clusters of galaxies, the large-scale structure, the cosmic microwave background, and the bullet cluster, you need something that fits every single time. You can't just pick one observation, make a model or a hypothesis to account for it, and then go take the afternoon off. Go for a picnic, go for a walk. You can't do that. That's not how it works. This is the strength of modern cosmology. It's not just one observation, but multiple independent probes of the universe that all arrive to the same conclusion. Not unlike Patreon. Patreon.com/PM Sutter is how this show lives. One contribution may seem small, but multiple independent contributions lead to the inescapable conclusion that I have the best podcast audience in the world. I can't thank you enough for your support, your questions, and your generosity. I owe it all to you. Yes, even you. But anyway, the strength of modern cosmology, multiple independent probes. You need to explain all the observations. You can't just cherry pick. You need to take the whole tree. So fine, you're going to create modified Newtonian dynamics, or MOND, to explain galaxy rotation curves. That's fine. That's legit. That is science. But can you also explain the Bullock cluster? No? Boom, you're done. You know what? You can go home for the afternoon because you're fired, and don't come back tomorrow. It's over. Put simply, MOND doesn't explain the Bullock cluster. Modifying Newtonian dynamics doesn't explain what we see in the Bullock cluster. This is another show digging deep into MOND. MOND itself, modified Newtonian dynamics, is itself pretty limited. It talks about changes in acceleration, but its bigger brother has a bigger brother, more complete theory called Tevis for tensor vector scalar. I'm sorry, I'm not in charge of names. That's a full-on replacement for general relativity. So you just say, okay, instead of a universe with general relativity, we have a universe with something called Tevis. Tevis doesn't work either for the Bullock cluster. So it doesn't look like we're missing any physics here. It just appears that Einstein is enough for us and gravitational lensing is legit. We can't find a satisfactory replacement for general relativity that's able to explain all the observations. I know I'm not giving MOND or Tevis, by the way, I'll pay $2 to anyone who names their kids and or pets these. I'm not giving MOND or Tevis their full due. I could go on in more detail. And if you want me to, I will. I'm kind of just highlighting them and moving on because there's cooler stuff that I want to talk about in our limited time together today. If you want, I'll do a whole episode on MOND and Tevis, modifying gravity, extensions to general relativity, et cetera, et cetera. But the point of today is that they don't work. They're not able to explain all the observations. In order to explain all the observations, we need matter that doesn't glow. We need stuff that's made of matter, some sort of particle that doesn't glow, that doesn't interact with light, aka dark matter. And not just a little bit, we need it to be like 80% of all the mass in the entire universe. We need it to be most of the mass of the universe in order to make these observations work. So once you say, okay, modifying gravity is not going to satisfactorily explain all the observations, we need dark matter. Now we have two more choices. Maybe it's just normal matter, you know, the same stuff as you and me, but just really, really dim. Or maybe, stay with me here, guys, it's something crazy and exotic, like a brand new particle in the universe that doesn't even interact with light. I mean, that's not that crazy of a concept, right? We discover new particles all the time. Yeah, like the neutrino. Neutrinos usually don't interact with light or normal matter. And for a long time, we thought they were massless, but they do actually have a tiny bit of mass. How much? We're not sure exactly. Open research question, but we do know it's not enough to explain the dark matter. That's another episode all about neutrinos and all about the growth of structure in our universe and how we know neutrinos can't explain the dark matter. But the point of neutrinos when it comes to dark matter is there are particles out there that do not interact with light. It is a part of our universe. It's a legit direction to go in. So maybe there's another particle out there that doesn't interact with light and can't explain the dark matter. But maybe not. Maybe it's not dark matter, but significantly dim matter. Maybe it's just not very bright at all matter, but not quite dark. Same stuff as you and me, just not all hot and glowy. I mean, that's a thing. But the Bullet Cluster teaches us something else. Whatever the dark matter is, it doesn't interact with itself. Remember, there's this tangled rack of hot gas in the middle of the Bullet Cluster, and there's two lumps of dark matter on opposite sides. Just like the galaxies are. The galaxies pass through each other. The dark matter passed through each other. Two lumps of dark matter collided and passed through each other. If dark matter interacts with itself, if it rubs up against itself or bounces off itself, it would get all messy like the hot gas does in the center. It's not there with the hot gases off to the sides. If dark matter interacted with itself, it gets messy. It doesn't, so it doesn't. Not only does dark matter not talk to light, it doesn't talk to itself. Have you ever had a falling out with a friend and then see them walking down the street? Yeah, dark matter's like that. Doesn't even make eye contact. Just pretends it doesn't even exist. So what could that be? What are some possible... Let's go crazy here because honestly, we're in uncharted territory. What could possibly be the dark matter? Well, maybe it's the dimmest possible thing. Maybe it's black holes, a lot of black holes. Hey, and if you have a swarm of black holes and send it crashing into another swarm of black holes, well, black holes are small compared to the volume of a galaxy cluster, so they'll pass right by each other, just like the galaxies themselves did. That's the ticket, except it's not. How do you make black holes? You make black holes from the death of massive stars. So to have a bunch of black holes now, today, in order to have a bunch of black holes in the Bullet Cluster, you need tons of stars in the past. You know, you need to get them cranking so they can die and turn into black holes in time to have the Bullet Cluster happen. And we know how many stars existed in the past. In fact, we know the total amount of all normal matter. Jargon alert, we usually call it baryonic matter. This is the matter that you're made of. We know the total amount. We know it from Big Bang nucleosynthesis. And I would love to devote an entire episode to BBN, Big Bang nucleosynthesis. So please ask. But the short version is, we understand the physics of the very early universe. We can predict the abundances of hydrogen, helium, lithium. Those match observations. Yay. And these numbers, these calculations provide a hard upper limit on the amount of normal matter. We know how much normal you and me and star stuff there is in our universe, and there simply is not enough to make sufficient numbers of black holes so that the black holes can be the dark matter. There is a small caveat. Primordial black holes may have formed in the very, very early universe, like the first minute or something. Physics got a little bit weird back then. It was a little bit different. There are some other ways to create black holes. It's still technically a possibility, but it seems pretty unlikely for a bunch of technical reasons that I won't go into because I don't want this podcast episode to go on forever. And I haven't talked about the WIMP miracle yet. So please ask if you'd like to know more about how primordial black holes might be created. When it comes to this story, is that they are most likely not responsible for the dark matter. That doesn't mean they can't exist, so I'd love to do an episode, but they're not connected to the dark matter. I can see the connection, why you might think it's connected. I mean, dark matter, black holes, kind of in the same family, but sorry. So is the dark matter modified gravity? No. Is dark matter normal matter, just really dim? No. Is it neutrinos? No. Is it black holes? No. The only hypothesis we have left, the only one that explains all the observations, the galaxy rotation curves, the cluster temperatures, the cosmic microwave background, the large scale structure, Big Bang nucleosynthesis, the Bullet Cluster, the only explanation that can answer all these problems is a new kind of particle. A new ingredient to the recipe of the universe. I can't emphasize this enough. We didn't turn to this conclusion because we thought it would be awesome, even though it's totally awesome. That's not the reason we picked it. It wasn't even our first guess. The overwhelming evidence from multiple lines of direct observations push us to this conclusion that there is a new kind of particle in our universe. Nature is telling us something, and we're trying our best to listen. Dark matter appears to be a particle because that is what best explains the observations. What is that particle? We don't know. We know it has to be massive. We know it has to be a particle. We know it has to be weakly interacting. Otherwise, it would rub up against itself and get tangled like the gas in the bullet cluster. It needs to be a weakly interacting massive particle. WIMP. WIMP. Not making this up, folks. Dark matter is thought to be a WIMP. Most of the mass of the universe is very, very WIMPy. Now here's the surprise coincidence. All the particles of our universe, quarks, electrons, neutrinos, what have you, all these particles emerged, for lack of a better word, out of the hot, dense, messy soup of the early universe. Can you tell I'm skipping over a lot of physics? Big Bang Nucleosynthesis, it's not just a great name for a band, it needs to be a separate episode. We know how much dark matter there is in the universe today. We don't know what it is, but we know how much of it there is. In order to get the observed amount, the mysterious particle, whatever this dark matter particle is, has to have certain properties, has to have, say, a certain range of masses in order to be responsible for all the observations that we see today. Unbeknownst to the cosmologists who were figuring all this out in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, still kind of trying to figure it out. Unbeknownst to the cosmologists who were studying the universe, the particle theorists were coming up with extensions to the standard model of physics. They were trying to unify all the forces. One such extension called supersymmetry, which is its own show, predicted a slew of new particles. Like, hey, if this theory of physics is correct, there's actually tons of other particles out there, including ones that fit the bill for dark matter. Two totally separate camps of scientists who don't even go to the same conferences were both finding motivations for the same ingredient to the universe. On the cosmology side, observations were demanding it. Mother Nature was saying, hey, looks like there's a new particle out here, guys. You should get on figuring that out. The high energy theorists, well, the theories were demanding. If we're trying to understand and make breakthroughs in our universe or our fundamental understanding of how the physics of our universe operates, it was predicting new kinds of particles that fit the bill. This is the WIMP miracle. Whatever the dark matter particle is, it has just the right properties. There are a few candidates out there in the theoretical models. Whatever it is, it had just the right properties to solve a bunch of problems in multiple areas of physics, which is pretty cool. That's why we're so excited by dark matter, because one, it can explain all these observations in cosmology, but two, it can help us move beyond the standard model of particle physics. It can help us learn about new fundamental physics. So is it all said and done? No. For one, we haven't seen the dark matter directly. We don't know. Of all these candidates out there, we don't know which one is it, or even if it's a mixture of its, could be more than one it. Maybe dark matter world is as complicated as the normal world with chemistry and interactions. That gives me a headache. And supersymmetry, which is, you know, based these theoretical models that where we're getting some ideas for candidates for dark matter, it's on a little shaky ground nowadays because there's been no new particles discovered at the Large Hadron Collider. And so we're actually starting to rule out some supersymmetry models. I'd love to do a whole episode on that. And to be perfectly honest, full disclosure, the WIMP dark matter hypothesis doesn't explain all the observations. Trust me, it does way better than modified gravity. It does way better than neutrinos. It does way better than black holes. There are some cases, like in the centers of galaxies, the number of satellite galaxies that a larger galaxy might have. There are some tension between observations and our theoretical understanding of what dark matter could be. It's not perfect. It's not perfect, but it's the best guess we have right now. There is something fishy going on in the universe, and we're pretty sure that a WIMP dark matter particle is the explanation for the fishiness. It's what's making that smell. Like I said, this episode doesn't even begin to cover the dark matter ground. There's a lot going on there, so please feel free to ask any more questions about it. How are we searching for it? What are the particle candidates? What are the shortcomings of dark matter? On and on and on. Please send me your questions if you'd like to hear more about dark matter. If you don't want to hear more about dark matter, I'm probably going to do another episode on it anyway, because let's face it, I'm really the one in charge of the show. This is a partnership. We're working on this show together because it's your ideas for questions, and you guys are actually really great about questions, so I'm not worried about it at all. Speaking of questions, before I go, remember that radio show I mentioned, you know, Space Radio? It's happening. Space Radio is going to be on the air. We've recorded the pilot episode with actual callers. You can go to spaceradioshow.com to give that pilot episode a listen. Send me your feedback, any thoughts, feelings, emotions you have about the show. We're taking a bunch of comments, and so when we go into production, we have a better idea of how to make the best possible radio show. That's going to run kind of in parallel to this podcast. Podcast is for the deep dives, for going in, spending a long time talking about dark matter. Space radio shows, so I can talk about the latest news, have on the air interactions with questions so we can have conversations. Listen, I'm here to answer your questions. I love sharing what I know about the universe. Ask a Spaceman, Space Radio are ways to do it. It looks like we're going to launch weekly episodes in July of 2017, in case you're listening to this in the far future. So literally stay tuned. And after taking all your comments about whether to keep it as a separate podcast line or not, we're thinking it will become its own podcast line, probably on its own feed, but we will pull in a few episodes here and there onto the Ask a Spaceman channel. But thanks so much for your feedback on that. And thanks especially to my Patreon contributors for keeping this show and keeping all my education and outreach activities going. I couldn't do it without you, especially my top Patreon contributors this month: Helgi B, Justin G, Justin R, Kevin O, Jessica K, Michael Z, and Chris C. You can help support the show too. Patreon.com/PM Sutter. Thanks again to @KDA Welch and Andrea C, Oscar Z, Peter W, William G, Olivia P, Matthew A, and @TheMayor, but the number 4 instead of the letter A, for today's questions about dark matter. Thanks again, everyone. You can keep those questions coming, #AskSpaceman to Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow me directly. My name is @PaulMattStar. You can also go to AskASpaceman.com to get those questions in, and I will see you next time for more complete knowledge of time and space.
It's time to get down to business with $30 a month business internet. WOW Business offers 99.9% network reliability so that you can keep your business moving. $30 a month gets you 30 megabytes per second with 24/7 US-based support, a price lock guarantee, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee. Lock in our lowest priced offer for the support you need. Go to switchtowellbusiness.com. Offer for new customers with a 2-year agreement subject to change. Prices do not include taxes, fees, and equipment charges. Restrictions apply.